I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts, welcome back. Better parts, better prices every day. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up this week on the SEC on CBS. Embattled Butch Jones, the Tennessee Volunteers take on the number one team of the country, the Alabama Crimson Tide. A lot of upsets last weekend, and our next guest is the host for the SEC on CBS. You see him on College Football Today, and then on Tuesdays on Inside College Football and the CBS Sports Network. Coverage this weekend begins at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. College Football Today, Vols and Tide. Adam Zucker joining us this morning on the show. Zuck, how you doing, man? Good morning.
P.A., my man, how are mornings treating you, buddy?
Mornings are treating me well. Football season is underway, obviously, and it's been great to follow along, although if you're a Vols fan, it has been brutal yet again. Is there any chance, do you believe, that the Vols can keep this thing respectable, considering how many problem moments they've had already this season?
I would tell you that at the beginning of this year, you would look at this game and feel just as confident for Tennessee as you would at this very moment, which is like very little confidence at all. Now it is, as the predicted margins go, it is the largest ever, and this is going to be the 100th meeting of Tennessee and Alabama. They're five touchdown underdogs, but they lost last year by 39, and that wasn't the reason Tennessee didn't win the East. Tennessee didn't win the East last year because they lost games to South Carolina and Vanderbilt later on. And Butch Jones isn't going to get fired for losing to Alabama. It might look like a reaction to a blowout, if that's what we're going to get, as many would expect. The reason is that more and more Tennessee fans just keep putting their heads in their hands at the end of these games, whether it's against Florida or just recently against South Carolina, because they're 3-3. They could be 5-1. I thought that this year, with Josh Dobbs gone, Derek Barnett gone, a lot of guys who were even injured last year now in the NFL, Alvin Kamara, the running back, I thought that this was going to be a dip year for them, a rebuilding year. I think Tennessee fans get even more upset when Butch goes to the podium and you know, whether it's the champions of life quote from last year when the SEC East was out of reach, or the fact that you can get leadership reps while not actually participating in a play during practice. Things like that just drive the Tennessee fans nuts. And so Butch Jones may already be dead to rights, and on that note, you know, this game could be where he's pretty much just being told to walk the plank, and they make a move after this game. Some people say, well, you know, let him finish the year. They also have adjusted the signing period, and Butch is known for his recruiting. You've had three decommitments recently, and the early signing period now in December means you need to show the recruits what you're going to do far more in advance than you used to. So there's a trickle-down effect there as well.
Do you consider the Tennessee job a good job?
Oh, absolutely. You know, yeah, absolutely. It's a monster program with a monster fan base, and until this year, you wouldn't even think of seeing an empty seat among the 102,000-plus at Neyland Stadium. So when you have the passion of the fans, and you're in the SEC East, even though you have to face Alabama every year and the traditional crossover in that rivalry, you know, it's one of the top jobs in the country. And let me tell you, Butch Jones has done a much better job with it overall than his predecessors, Lane Kiffin, Derek Dooley. That didn't go so well. And they also ran Uncle Phil out of town when things started to dip to 500 or below 500 as well. So it's a demanding job. But, you know, it's similar in a way with like a Nebraska, where you haven't had true glory now in a couple of decades. But you have to kind of have a reality check as far as what are realistic expectations. Tennessee is a far more fertile recruiting ground. Nebraska still gets kids from all over the country to come there. But, you know, high school kids, they don't have the memory that you and I have. And I don't even mean to put you in my generation because I've got at least a decade on you. So, you know, these kids have grown up with Alabama being dominant, Clemson being dominant and on the rise and fun under Dabo. Urban Meyer's made Ohio State the destination again, Penn State as well. Well, you know, kind of the way Oregon was the hot ticket for a few years there as well. So that's why there's impatience. You gotta stay hot. You gotta keep the momentum.
Adam Zucker, SEC, CBS College Football, joins us here on the show. You're being too humble. We're only about 4 years apart here, Zucker.
No.
Not a full decade. Yeah, it's only four.
Well, you look great.
Thanks, man. So do you. So I want to ask you about Alabama, because last week we actually had four of the top 10 teams go down, and Clemson obviously being one of those, and we thought Clemson was going to run the table and get back to the college football playoff undefeated. Can you see Alabama at any point in time this season being vulnerable to an upset like those other four top 10 teams were last weekend?
I would say, and I would have been more confident in saying this a week ago, but I would say that what are things that would be factors in an upset? Well, going on the road, right, and a rivalry game. So the Iron Bowl at the end of the year fits both of those bills, and Auburn at home usually has some crazy magic go down. Now, a lot of teams go to LSU and flounder, but after what we saw LSU do already this year and losing to Troy and having trouble in games you might not have expected, I was pretty surprised that Auburn lost the game that they led 20-0 against LSU this past weekend. So I thought Alabama would have a hurdle there, and Alabama against Georgia, if that's already our preordained SEC championship, and what a mammoth one it would be, the Tide would have a hurdle there too. But the way this team plays, the discipline they have, the way they play the game of football, just, you know, they don't rely on aerial assault and high scoring offenses. They're weatherproof. They feel upset proof compared even to the teams that had trouble with Ole Miss a few years ago. It's hard to see them dropping a game because they can not only out push their opponents, they can out scheme their opponents. And Jalen Hurts, he thinks quickly and he moves quickly, even though he looks like it's just effortless and he just glides through teams sometimes. Alabama, you know, until the SEC championship game, to me on a neutral field, I don't see anybody getting in their way at this point.
20 seconds left. Do you think Georgia can win a national championship?
I do. I don't know if it's this year. Jake Fromm was tested in his first start at Notre Dame. I don't think he's truly been tested since, and that's what I need to see. And they'll also have to go to Auburn. Their defense will have to deal with Georgia Tech, which has been a nightmare for them as well. And obviously the aforementioned penciled-in SEC championship game. But it's Bama East right now, Bama Light, whatever you want to call it, under Kirby Smart. So it's happening. It may not be this year, but very soon.
Tennessee takes on Alabama Saturday. SEC on CBS Game of the Week. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern Time with College Football Today, hosted by our very own Adam Zucker. Zuck, good to catch up, buddy. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, next time we'll do 20 on just Syracuse.
Okay, let's do it. Adam Zucker joining us here on the show, part of the Orange Mafia as well. You can catch him Saturdays throughout the season on College Football Today on CBS and Tuesdays on Inside College Football on CBS Sports Network. Tennessee, I like that comparison that he had to Nebraska, because Tennessee is a program with huge fan base. I've been fortunate to be at both Lincoln for a big Nebraska game, and last year got to go down to Knoxville for a big Vols game. And if you bring a recruit in there and you see 80,000 people in Lincoln in the corn silo that is the Husker Stadium, or you go down and see 90,000 or 100,000 people inside Neyland Stadium, and you are looking around and you're looking at the passion and saying, I want to play here on Saturdays, that can still be there. The fan base is waiting to explode. You play in two premier elite conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, and you have Heisman Trophy winners, you have NFL stars, you have national championships, you have a history in those programs. But both of those programs have fallen on mediocrity and have become a punchline, and their fan base has turned negative. And it's only going to take one guy to light that spark again at both those places. And they're not far away because they have all of these facilities and this fan base and this history. So Butch Jones, this is going to be it. He's not going to survive this. And as Zucker just said, they might make him, in Zucker's words, quote, walk the plank this weekend against Alabama, take it on the chin, lose by 7 touchdowns, and then fire him next week. But he's not going to survive this. It's still a job you can win in, though, because the SEC East, up until this year with now a beast in Georgia, has been open the last couple of years. And if all it is Georgia and Tennessee, hey, again, you're not going up against Alabama like you are in the West every single year. You can win there. And they will win there again. But Butch Jones is clearly not the guy. He got you to the bridge. He pushed you over the bridge. And now you've got to get somebody to come in and actually take you to that next elite level. Last night in baseball in the Bronx, the Yankees trailed 4-0. And you know the oinking Yankee hog being Mraz guaranteed that the Astros would not win another game in the series yesterday. He said the Yankees will win the next 3 and that they're going into the World Series. He's already talking World Series yesterday. Well, the most recent version of the oinking Mraz Yankee montage is here.
And it will be 2-2 because we have Lance McCullers, who hasn't won since early July, coming into our house in the Bronx.
The Yankees trail 4-0. They need a major rally. The pitch to Judge swung on. A high drive to deep center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Oh, what a Judgian blast.
Sonny Gray becomes a true Yankee today. A true Yankee by throwing like a 2-hit shutout.
Swung on and drove it to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is off the wall. The tying run scores. The Yankees have come all the way back.
And we go back and we finish it in game 6. Hope Kate Upton has the tissues out because it's over. The Houston Astros have won their last game of the year. You pump for Yankees Dodgers? I am. It's my time now.
Swung on and line. Base hit. Right center field in the alley. Judge scores. Here comes Didi. He is going to score. One of the greatest rallies I've ever seen.
Just like the 96 World Series versus Atlanta. Everybody counted the Yankees out down 2-0. Same deal. Just like last series, they were down 2-0 to Cleveland. We love being down 2-0. That's who we are. We'll be down 2-0 to the Dodgers too and come back and win that series. It's my time now. Finally, my time. 2009, 8 years ago, we finally have a chance to have another parade down the Canyon of Heroes.
Gardner makes the catch. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
Let's not go to the World Series just yet, okay?
Happening. Okay, so Saturday we'll celebrate, relax, watch a little college football, and celebrate the Yankees in the World Series. Great time.
Piggy Dandy. Mraz. Pinstripe Swine. Bronx Bacon. Bilotti, I don't know how you're surviving this on the other side of the glass today.
Deep breaths.
I was wrong, too. Sonny Gray only gave up 1 hit.
And Lance McCullers was awesome. You said he was going to get run. He was awesome.
Yankees win. The Yankees win. 2 wins away from the World Series, boys. Astros, elimination day coming Friday.
Why couldn't that Astros bullpen just hold a lead? You could have put the slovenly, loudmouth, arrogant Yankee fans like Mraz in their place, terrified down 3-1 with Keuchel and Verlander on the hill coming up. When we come back, we'll do college football with Danny Werfel, Heisman Trophy winner, national champion of the Florida Gators, of course. Let's talk about the SEC and the rest of college football after a weekend of upsets last weekend. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
sports talk was meant to be on an imaginary spaceship.
Shout out to my boy, Skinny Fat, Mraz. Love you. Follow both of you guys on Instagram.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. A reminder, every episode of the DA show is available on iTunes. So simply go to iTunes and for free download any episode, any hour, any interview like our upcoming one with a Heisman Trophy winner. That's on iTunes. Simply search DA on CBS. Our next guest won the Heisman Trophy, won Florida's first ever national championship, played in the NFL for 7 seasons, and is one of the Gators' great legends. And in a couple of weeks, the Gators will take on the Georgia Bulldogs in the annual world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville. And right now, that should be a real good one considering how solid Georgia has looked near the top of the standings. Joining us here on the show is Danny Werfel. Danny, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. So much thanks to go to you to having us have you jump on the show, and thanks so much for carving out the time. And coming up next week, and not this one, but next weekend, you guys will be hosting the annual Desire Cup Golf Tournament, Florida-Georgia football game that weekend. And right now, the Georgia Bulldogs are one of the top teams in the country. When you look at the Bulldogs, do you think that they've got what it takes to be able to take down Alabama and try to win a national championship?
Man, I tell you what, I'm so happy you asked that question. Because to me, the more we can get them thinking about that question, the less they'll even think about playing the Gators. Because that's to me one of the biggest ways you can get a great team to slip up is when they start thinking too far down the road. I mean, for us to talk about it, I do think they're clearly the best team that there is to match up against Alabama and the SEC, and any team could beat any team on that given day. I think I'd still need to see I want to get through the Florida-Georgia game before I'm a full believer in the Bulldogs. I put out a tweet at the beginning of October kind of jabbing them, saying, yeah, the Bulldogs are always undefeated in September. And now, I guess now that with social media, people remember that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm trying to be a little more humble about it because they do look really good.
Well, when it comes to the Georgia Bulldogs, they have a freshman quarterback in Jake Fromm leading the way right now. You were a freshman quarterback at Florida in 1993. He's going to take on a lot of pressure, obviously being that role in the SEC. But now it's a new age with attention and social media and the like. What was it like for you to be a freshman quarterback at Florida trying to pick up the pieces of that program?
Well, I mean, you've got both sort of the on-the-field stuff, which is pretty intimidating. I mean, the big stadiums, you're not used to that. You've got the game that's going so fast. I mean, it just really feels like things are moving so quickly, and it's hard to keep your decisions up to speed and all that. But then you've got the pressure, as you mentioned, of off the field and all this, all of a sudden, attention on campus and getting to and from class, or to and from class, huh? That just came to me. So just a real, a lot of stuff going on. But he sure seems to be handling it really well, and they're firing on all cylinders. Kirby Smart, I think, is a fantastic coach, and they're a force to be reckoned with.
In 1996, when you guys won the national championship and you won the Heisman, there was only one loss on the docket. You guys got to avenge that with Florida State. But I want to ask you, we were talking about just before Georgia needing to get through some rivalry games and maybe getting too big ahead before they get to Alabama. Was there a game at all that season where you said, oh boy, we just don't have the stuff, and maybe because we overlooked this opponent?
Yeah, well, I think probably a better example of that would be the year before. You know, we were undefeated my junior year, may have had a better overall team. We went to play Nebraska for the national title, and I think we really did go in overconfident. I mean, we just thought we were from Florida. We got more speed. They can't stop us, and they killed us. And so I think that really set the stage for us that next year to not take any moment for granted or any team for granted. And we really had a lot of really strong games in a row against some tough teams. And of course, Florida State did beat us at the end of the season that year, which they just played lights out. And we made a few adjustments, put in the shotgun, and we're fortunate to get another crack at him for the national title, and it turned out well for us.
Danny Werfel joins us here on the show. In terms of your Gators, it's been such a weird season because they have the Hail Mary to beat Tennessee and that comeback against Kentucky on the road, and those were kind of wins by the hair of their chinny-chin-chin, and then the last 2 weeks, it was the other side of the coin, the one-point loss to LSU, the two-point loss to Texas A&M their last 2 weeks out. How to kind of figure out where the balance is for the Gators, considering they have kind of both sides of that difficult coin to deal with in college football.
Yeah, it's been a weird season for us. You know, on one hand, it's like you say, oh man, we could easily be, you know, 4-5, 6-1, but on the other hand, you could be, you know, 2-4 or something. So it's a real weird thing to get a handle on. And I think one of the challenges that faces our program is you know, Spurrier and Urban Meyer set the expectations so high that, you know, even when you're winning by a few points, people aren't really happy. And so it's a very competitive league and a lot of high expectations, and our Gators certainly aren't living up to them right now.
So tell me about how you view the Tennessee program, because Butch Jones is under fire. A lot of people don't think that Butch Jones will survive this, and I think there's this debate of how good a coach could they get in there. Do you view the Tennessee program as a quote-unquote sleeping giant, a potentially great program? Where do you kind of view them and where they are at right now?
That's hard to say. I mean, I would say, you know, there's another program where just the expectations are high, and they have just underperformed in so many years that you only have so much patience with that. I mean, I think Butch Jones is a great coach and can be real effective in a lot of places, but, a lot of people like Will Muschamp at Florida, and I think he's a fantastic coach. And yet, when you're not getting the team where it needs to go in this day and age, there's very little patience.
Danny Werfel is our guest here on the show, and next weekend you guys are preparing for the big Florida-Georgia game, and of course you are a huge part of the Desire Street Ministries, and they are going to be hosting the 7th annual Desire Cup fundraiser weekend. You guys will have the golf tournament with all these great alum between Georgia and Florida, and Desire Street started working with the 9th Ward of New Orleans side by side with people in the community to find solutions for poverty-stricken communities, which is an amazing cause as well. Why is this so important to you, and how much energy you put forth on it?
Well, I got involved 20 years ago with Desire Street when I was playing for the Saints as a rookie, and it broke my heart to see the challenges and obstacles that many people in our country face that I didn't and many others don't face. And I began getting involved, and it's my full-time job and passion over these past 20 years. And our headquarters for Desire Street are in Atlanta now, and we're operating in several communities all over the southeast of the United States and making plans to grow beyond that. So it's a big core part of who I am and what my life's mission is. And, you know, of course, with the other passion loving the Gator sports, the Florida-Georgia game provides a great opportunity to put those together. So we created the Desire Cup golf tournament. It's been its seventh year this year coming up. And we pit Florida fans against Georgia fans and Florida celebrities against Georgia celebrities and have a fantastic time at TPC Sawgrass. And we raise money for the work that we're doing in all the different under-resourced communities. And so it's a real fun event coming up. And, of course, I know a lot of listeners here probably won't be able to make it, but if you go check out our website, desirestreet.org, there's several ways to connect, and we have a campaign that we're running alongside it to try to raise some money to start some new programs. So we would love people to check out our website, desirestreet.org.
What is the toughest part about working in the community with poverty-stricken areas? What do you see that you go, boy, I'll never be able to forget that, and that's why this is so important?
You know, there's so many answers to that question. You know, I'd love to come on the show and talk for an hour about that because it's so challenging. But I think, one thing I'll never forget was when I started working in the 9th Ward and heard that the valedictorian at the public high school usually didn't pass the ACT, which, like, blew my mind. Like, wait a minute. You as a young person would work your tail off, be dedicated, do everything you could, and yet the school system wasn't in a position to help you succeed. And that's just one of thousands of things, and I think you know that there's just so many obstacles. Kids are growing up with young kids. You see bright eyes and excitement and hope and energy, and then just life systematically it seems like beats them down to where you can almost see the hope begin to fade. And so to be able to come in and to help create some opportunities and to help remove some obstacles, bring in some external resources, but just to help people live up to their full potential is incredibly, incredibly rewarding.
Such an important cause, such an important energy to put out there. And so I definitely encourage people to go get involved by visiting the website that Danny just talked about, desirestreet.org. And specifically when it comes to the Desire Cup Golf Tournament, go to desirestreet.org/desirecup. And you can help participate by donating anything as low as just $77 or anything more than that or even less than that. So check it out there. Very cool event and very cool cause. Danny Werfel, 1996 national champion, Heisman Trophy winner, and big, big part of what they are doing down there with Desire Cup and getting ready for Gators and Bulldogs next weekend. Danny, man, next time we will have you on for an hour to talk about it, buddy. Thanks so much
for doing what you do. There's lots going on, lots to talk about.
Right on, man. Thanks so much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Danny Werfel joining us here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio. It's interesting, you know, when you look at the Georgia Bulldogs schedule right now, that obviously they do have a shot to get into that SEC title game and be one of the teams that will get into the college football playoff. And if they run the table from here on out and only lose to Alabama in the SEC title game, is it possible that there's two teams in the SEC title game? Is it possible that Georgia knocks off Alabama and that you can't keep Alabama out of the college football playoff? Things to be asked, although Georgia still does have to play at Auburn next month. And, of course, the Iron Bowl for Alabama, same bit. When we come back on the show, should we wait to hand Golden State the NBA Finals trophy? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Muffins, mornings, mothership.
20 vodkas a day, man. And that's after about 10 cold Miller Lights. Yeah.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Ah, Ric Flair. The man of 20 vodka sodas and then 10 Miller Lights, or 10 Miller Lights followed by 20 vodka sodas over the course of a day. And did that day after day. After day.
How many beers ago? Probably 1,000.
Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. And a reminder that the best of clips here on the show are available on YouTube every single day. So if you missed anything or want to hear it again in video form, check out the best of what happened every single day, the best rants, the best interview clips, the best jokes, the best moments by going to youtube.com/CBS Sports Radio. And there you'll be able to see Mraz's piggish Yankee rant from yesterday, which we will play the Yankee piggy dandy montage again next hour. But it should be noted today is also Nomad release day. And today we will release an episode of me traveling to Yankee Stadium to take in a Subway Series game between the Mets and Yankees, myself being a Mets fan. My buddy Pete being a Yankee fan, and the battle that goes on in New York City between those two clubs. And now, obviously, the Yankees two wins away from going back to the World Series. And I documented some good, tense moments of fighting in the stands, people trying to argue with me, some potential fights that could go down, a lot of crass behavior, we shall say. So you can check that out when I release that later on today. All of your Yankee fan brethren, Mraz, feeling good and doing well?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
They didn't know then it was our time.
I'm just glad you guys are going to potentially get off the schneid for the first time in 8 years. It's been a while.
I haven't been in the playoffs in 3 of the last 4 years. It's crazy, you know, but it's good to have that taste again.
8 years you've been waiting for a championship.
And before that, it was 9 years. So you could say we're long overdue here.
Mm-hmm.
And Luis Vizcaíno's old now. That was 2000.
And you've only had five titles in your adulthood.
Yeah, I mean, the first one I was 9 years old. But yeah, for the most part, yeah, only five titles. You need they say you need at least 10 before you drop dead.
Is that what they say?
That's in the sports fan handbook. At least 10 titles before you drop dead.
The Yankees fan handbook says get to the 10 titles, then you can die happily.
Exactly. Then no more talking about firing the managers, no more of that. You get 10 in your chamber, you're good.
Double digits.
Double digits. Two hands, 10 rings.
Such swine. Last night, NBA opened up its season, and you had a win early by the Cleveland Cavaliers after that gruesome injury by Gordon Hayward, or to Gordon Hayward. And then late, you had a buzzer beater that was waved off by Kevin Durant, and the Houston Rockets beat Golden State. The Warriors lose 122-121 and lose opening night. Now, for LeBron, last night I didn't think the Cavaliers necessarily played a smooth and polished game, but they certainly have a lot more pieces, a lot more depth than they've had in recent years. That should provide more of a cushion for LeBron, although there is no secondary scorer on the floor right now like Kyrie Irving could be and was at times last year, the last couple of years in Cleveland. Without Isaiah Thomas healthy right now, the secondary scoring load is going to be a big deal for the Cavaliers. Once Isaiah comes back, assuming it doesn't take him too long to get into a rhythm, then that will be taken care of. Now, we'll see. Maybe he never gets into a smooth rhythm. But once he's back in the new year, sometime in 2018, LeBron won't have to do too much. To this point, don't be surprised if the Cavaliers have a bit of a herky-jerky, clunky first couple months of the season, because LeBron, kind of like last night, is going to probably lean off, step down, and let the team kind of figure it out. This is a LeBron byproduct where LeBron teaches on the fly and allows guys to make mistakes, knowing that they can afford losses in the regular season as long as they are ready and healthy for the postseason, which is exactly what happened last year. They were not the number one seed of the East, and yet they still cruised to the NBA Finals through the Eastern Conference playoffs. Don't be surprised if the same exact thing happens now, because they've got to fit in Derrick Rose and Jay Crowder, and now Smith and Thompson are going to come off of the bench, and they're trying to figure out how Kevin Love is going to work in a new position and how they're going to make Dwayne Wade's minutes work. There's going to be a lot that goes into making this thing smooth, if it ever does get smooth. And so the secondary scoring is going to be a big deal. So what you will see last night is a bit of a blueprint for the Cavaliers. LeBron will take the first three quarters, and last night was a big deal. It was Kyrie back in the building. It was opening night. It was national TV. So LeBron's going to put in more effort last night than he does in other nights. But there was still the element of three quarters, feel it out. Cavs had built a big lead, were looking good, and then the lead got salted all the way away. Nice comeback by the Celtics, and then LeBron has to make a couple of big shots in the final couple of series. Last night, LeBron finishes the 29-16-9-2. 29-16-9-2, which is a box score that had not been accomplished. That many points, rebounds, blocks, assists in a decade. And here are some of the names that have done that type of box score as researched by Fox Sports' Nick Wright. Charles Barkley, Robert Parrish, Larry Bird, Charles Barkley, Charles Barkley, Larry Bird, Hakeem Olajuwon, Charles Barkley, Shaq, Tim Duncan, Vince Carter. You're talking about some Mount Rushmore type guys there, Hall of Fame type guys, which is pretty amazing because LeBron James is now starting his 14th year in the NBA. 14 years. And he's still doing things like that. And that team's not nearly anywhere where it's going to be when we get to the playoffs. We'll have a lot of time to marvel at LeBron's excellence, but it goes to show you that still at year 14, the guy's doing that type of stuff. And you know what the honest comparison is LeBron and Tom Brady. Those are two guys defying father time. Those are two guys that at their ages in previous generations would not be able to accomplish this. But in this generation, with this science and whatever's going on in their bodies, neither LeBron nor Tom Brady seem to ever age. 14 years on top of, and don't give me, well, he never played college. Yeah, well, he plays into the postseason in the NBA Finals every single year, grueling 2 months in the playoffs, and plays in the Olympics. So he has plenty of basketball miles and minutes on his body, and in year 14, he's still doing that. Astonishing. Last night, do we have the final call by any chance when it comes to Houston and the Golden State Warriors? It's funny to listen to the guys on TNT last night talk about the season, and they talked about openly, and this is why I think the NBA on TNT and that pre- and post-game show with Charles and Ernie and Kenny and Shaq is the best in the business. They are partners with the NBA, and they brought up the fact that Michael Jordan said there's going to be 28 teams that are garbage and then two teams that could win a championship. And they openly talked about whether that is good for basketball or not. And a couple of the guys were honest in that it's not good for the league if all of these cities feel like they've got no chance. And obviously, everyone is chasing down the Golden State Warriors. And last night was a buzzer beater that was waved off that would have given Kevin Durant and Golden State an opening night win.
10 seconds exactly remaining. McCaw waiting. Livingston goes back court to get it. Circles back with Ariza guarding him. Down to 7 seconds. Pass to Curry. Takes a dribble. Takes a two. It's on the way. No good. Ball tipped out by Livingston. Batted by Livingston to Durant. Baseline jumper is up and good! Durant at the buzzer! It's good! It looks like the Warriors have won! Sean Livingston kept it alive! And KD knocked it home! Baseline left! 123-122. What a way to start the year. Hold on, hold the phone. It's going to be no good. We saw the replay. The ball was still in KD's hands with zeros on the clock. It's still fingertips. It's going to be no good.
Tim Roy on Warriors Radio. So, opening night goes to the Rockets. And every time we assume it's going to be real easy, I think we end up doing ourselves a disservice. And by that I mean, last year we just assumed the Warriors would blitzkrieg to a championship. And in many ways they did, although once we got to the NBA Finals, and even the Western Conference Finals, had they not had the injury to Kawhi Leonard, maybe everything is a little bit different. At least there is more pressure on the Warriors. Year two now with Kevin Durant, we assume they're just going to get right back there and win again, and people have talked about them winning 5 in a row or 6 in a row, and that's the way that it feels right now. But sports is weird, sports is funky, sports is wonky. Are the Warriors the best team in basketball? No question about it. Are they going to breeze through the regular season again and rip through the postseason and win a championship? I doubt it. I mean, we saw it last night. Gordon Hayward, within 5 minutes, snaps his ankle. What happens if the same thing happened to Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or Draymond Green or Klay Thompson? If any of those guys snapped their ankle like Gordon Hayward did or like Paul George did or like Sean Livingston did to his knee, you know, if one of those injuries happened, which happens a lot, suddenly the Warriors are not that much better than everybody else. They would still be great. My point is, they have benefited from an injury history recently that has been very nice to them and probably unkind to the opponents that they have played. Think about the Cleveland Cavaliers the first time 3 years ago that they played in the NBA Finals, and neither Kevin Love nor Kyrie Irving could play. How different is that series if those guys are playing? So I think that when we just kind of assume, oh, don't worry, the Warriors are going to win 75 games, you know, who knows? This offseason was not exactly a smooth one for Kevin Durant. The guy is fighting on social media using anonymous aliases.
Google, Yahoo, Facebook, Twitter.
He's taking a shot at Steph Curry's Under Armour sneakers. You've got guys saying, why are you... You just won. Why are you doing this type of stuff? You should have the monkey off of your back. You've had, I mean, the health of that team largely. I know last year KD was out for a little bit, but when it came and it mattered, that team has been super healthy the last 2 years of the NBA Finals and the playoffs largely. You know, I mean, some things can happen, and last night it showed that the Houston Rockets could step up and in Oakland go toe-to-toe. I tend to think also there's an exhaustion thing that happens where you are super motivated that first year now with Kevin Durant and KD helps push that team to the next level. What happens in year two? It starts taking its toll, which is also what makes LeBron of the Cavaliers runs so amazing, and specifically LeBron, that he has had the energy and not fatigue and exhaustion to go to seven straight NBA Finals and potentially at eighth this year. So I'm not willing in October to suddenly be like, yeah, I'm not watching the NBA this season because it doesn't matter. Because last night shows you. Half a second here, 0.2 seconds there, and the Warriors lose a basketball game. When we come back, can the Dodgers sweep October?
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.